Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Professor Michael Bartz, global top authority in next generation enterprise business transformation. Michael, you've done a lot. You've been a consultant for many years, working at the highest level with some really, really large corporations from around the world. And now you're a professor, in fact, a leading professor in business transformation. I really do appreciate you coming in today to share your deep experiences with our audience.
My pleasure.
Now, Michael, because of your world-leading position and because you're so highly respected due to your experiences and expertise, as perhaps one of the world's foremost experts in next-generation enterprise business transformation, this year you led a high-level European Union workshop. Can you profile the participants of this workshop and what they gained in your discussions about the new world of work?
Okay, see, the interest is enormous as worldwide industries are in an enormous change at the moment, which is ongoing. More and more companies, and not only companies, states, industrial areas, industries discover that there is an opportunity to work in new ways and to create value in corporate organizations in completely new ways, which differ completely from what we know from the past. And it's all in the end about efficiency and effectiveness and increasing those by using innovative new work forms in corporate organizations. And that's a great opportunity for industry organizations, industrial regions, and governments. And those stakeholders actually were involved as we were discussing not only the change of corporate organizations, but as well of or about macroeconomic change.
Now, what are the top challenges faced by enterprises and governments today?
The main challenges are that actually top 10-20% of corporate organizations have started to leverage and use new work forms and are on the way becoming next generation enterprise. And the rest is somehow lagging and is not sure what to do strategically. Well, and when I say leveraging new work forms, we can talk about that a little bit later, more in detail. It's about getting rid of traditional work forms, which are, for example, defined by presence in offices, which is about control culture and measuring performance by means of control. Many things which we actually know from maybe still our work life, but for sure from our parents and grandparents' work life. But these work patterns and behaviors and management patterns and behaviors are not valid anymore. A little bit like antiques. And now the challenge is how to cope with these changes. Option A is I just lean back and wait and see what to do. My competitors maybe go ahead. I will be watching it and I decide later on if I follow this trend or not. So kind of a passive attitude. Or there are now other companies who actually study carefully what's going on and try to understand if they can develop a strategic growth momentum and a business strategy from these trends, and in order to increase the value of their own organization, of their company, of their business. And here is the fundamental decision that has to be taken. Do I take an active, proactive approach towards next generation enterprise and new world of work? Or do I prefer for the moment a more passive wait and watching attitude?
So then, Michael, you know, you talked about sort of the challenges faced by enterprises and governments because there's this new world of work. Then what are the opportunities?
Yeah, the opportunities are to become more efficient and more effective. How? For maybe a couple of very practical examples. If I think of my grandfather's company, steel manufacturing, it was simple. It was a factory with distinctive walls, employees that came in every day. Everything was somehow simple and straightforward. Today's, it's not so clear anymore. I've got the opportunity to fragment my business. So business can mean it's something happening in my premises or outsourced to outsourcing partners, part of my value chain outsourced. Some of my value creation can happen on the supplier side. I can work in clusters, coopetitions, other cooperation forms with other corporate organizations, even competitors. So the value chain is much more complex today, or can become much more complex, but in the end more flexible and agile, and in the end more innovative. And this provides a huge advantage to be able to react faster and more efficient to changes in the environment. Secondly, as my grandfather was really used to have his employees and management team around him every day, and they became old together in this factory, and gray hairs and so on and so forth. Today, it's not so clear. First, you might still have employees, but they might not be full-time employees. So there is an upcoming share of alternative forms of employment. For example, in the European Union, on average, between 20% and 30% of employees in corporate organizations are temporary workers. And there are about 10 alternative forms of employment which are coming up, and which develop and substitute classical full-time employment. And third, as another example, my grandfather was used to have these people around him. Nowadays, there is actually little reason to come to an office every day to work from an office. So an office is actually losing his the meaning of and importance of being the only place where you can perform your work. And it's unnecessary to waste or invest time commuting every day, as we have got enough and simple technical tools which allow technically to work remotely, video conferencing solutions like Skype, Link, Lotus Notes, and all as well. Together with technology, there are now new management methods available which allow to manage people remotely, and which support virtual work style. And that's maybe the fourth fundamental change ahead. It's the change from a control management culture towards a trust-based management culture, which is more oriented towards management by objective, which is already a quite well-known term. And if you add all these components together, you can actually have in mind a picture of a completely new corporate organization, which can be perfectly branded as a next generation enterprise, which means less presence, less control, less value add within the company. Value add can be created outside the company. So a next generation company is actually more comparable to something fuzzy, cloudy, or more to a, let's call it a company cloud, than something that was well known to my grandfather with his steel factory with the four walls around it and full-time employees and everybody being present every day.
Michael, I mean, that's really quite fascinating how you describe this next generation enterprise and the new world of work. Do you have anything else to add about what is a next generation enterprise and to further define this new world of work?
Yeah, I would love to share an example. As one of my research projects is ongoing with Microsoft in Austria, and what we did there is creating a new work environment. And it happened actually in 2011. And the most fundamental change was actually that from October on, it was made explicit by the management to all employees that from October 2011 on, nobody is expected to come to the office anymore. Nobody is expected to come to the office anymore. So everybody does have a free choice of where to work and when to work. And this was made so explicit by even telling, and don't try kind of old tricks. You might know it from many companies, like you bring in your jacket in the morning, put it on your chair in front of your desk, and you leave your jacket until the evening so that everybody knows Michael is in the office. Some people even have two jackets to do this trick. Or the old trick, never leave the office in the evening before your manager. So they made explicit, doesn't matter anymore. That's not a way how you can show and demonstrate performance. From now on, we have other measures to evaluate performance and to measure performance. So feel free and find your way to perform your work in the best way you can, and choose the place, for example, that you love most and that makes you most efficient and effective with your work. That was the most fundamental change. With it came a change of the office of the Austrian Microsoft subsidiary. As this was a classical office before, made to, let's say, host classically desk chairs, computer. You know these classical patterns. The team actually found out that this kind of an office space became useless in this new work context. And what they actually were missing was meeting spaces to meet within the company, so employees and managers meeting and collaborating, that they actually miss meeting space and a platform to collaborate with their customers more intensely and to collaborate with their partner network. As you can see, the partner network of Microsoft in Austria is about 28,000 people working within the Microsoft ecosystem in Austria. So here you can see, due to a crucial part of the value chain being outside of the company, 28,000 people, there is a really urgent need to have an office that is more a social collaboration platform than a place which is hosting and offering space to desks. So what they did was simply getting rid of desk space and substituting it and creating social space, meeting space. And by the way, when they recreated this office, they decided to create an extremely creative, design-oriented space. And it does not look uniform. What I mean here, for example, you can find a meeting room designed looking like a wooden hut in Canada. Or you can find a meeting space which is designed like an oriental bazaar or a Japanese tea room. Everything for anybody's taste, the right environment. And so they got rid of these typical 1980s, 90s grayish office design throughout this process, which is also very important. And they opened the office to visitors, by the way. You can book an office tour. And so far, since the opening in October 2011, over 6,000 people booked an office tour and visited the office just to see the office and the Microsoft people working in this next generation enterprise. And this is a fascinating number for Austria, as we are having like 8 million inhabitants in Austria. This is for Austria a significant number and indicates the high interest of the public in this next generation pilot project in Austria. And meanwhile, Many companies have started to do something similar. Banks, for example, the leading banks, manufacturing companies, traditional industry like wood industry. So we can see more and more companies investigating or starting already new world of work and next generation enterprise transformation projects. And now there is a next challenge, which is more the macroeconomic development and implications. And that maybe we can talk about a little bit further down the way. But so far, I think this is an astonishing example. And by the way, Microsoft Switzerland did the same. Microsoft in Germany is about to do the same. Within the Microsoft organization, there's a huge leverage and transfer of know-how all around these pilots ongoing. And not only within Microsoft, the very best thing is Microsoft is sharing their learnings, insights with interested companies outside Microsoft. So it's a, let's say, an open public showcase where they test for themselves and for other companies, for the sake of other companies, what can work and cannot work. And there is a lot to learn about what can work and what cannot work.
You know, it's interesting. A number of questions come to mind. You know, you have this kind of different approach. And there's countries out there that are still in the sort of developing phase. They maybe in Eastern Europe, where they're used to a very kind of centrally controlled, very structured environment. When you have this sort of systemic, government-driven kind of cultural challenge, how would this new model be embraced in those kinds of countries?
I see what you mean. And I think especially for these countries, it is even a chance, an opportunity, as they can influence a lot directly. And it's somehow a must and an obligation, as not doing anything about developing the national economy towards next generation work models and enterprises does mean being passive and missing an economic opportunity, growth opportunity. On the other hand, it's a huge if you as a government start to embrace this opportunity proactively, the growth momentum for the national economy is enormous. Why? Thomas Friedman actually was so smart bringing it to one focal point. As he said in his famous book title, "The World is Flat." Never before it was so cheap, so easy, so simple to plug in to global economy by, for example, and especially leveraging newest technologies, newest and hottest innovations from industrial value creation processes and so on and so forth. So in one term, it was never so easy to become a next generation enterprise. Doing so working more virtual, embracing remote management work forms, changing from control to trust culture, leveraging new economy, new technologies, you can suddenly quantum leap into global economy with your local industry. So what I mean is, it has been so easy to become, for example, a supplier in the global economy, to find customers in the global economy, to connect with customers, business customers and consumer, private sector customers, to sell to customers in business and consumer segment as the means, for example, to connect through internet-based technologies are so simple and cheap that it becomes a must for government and for governments to think about the opportunities and to develop programs, industrial programs, to enhance or to bring local industries, national industries to this next level. So we are working, for example, in Austria as well on programs. And the objective is, and the question is, how to make the Austrian industry or industries and economy more competitive within global markets, and how to plug in a stronger way into global markets. And especially, we are also facing, like many Eastern Europe states and governments, geographical areas which we have got in Austria, which are really remote. Just think of mountain areas, very much rural areas, and we have to think about how to support and how to bring companies within these areas, and there are fascinating companies in these areas, how to plug them into global markets. And the fascinating thing is, you don't need so presence in an international market, is not physical presence, is not a primary factor anymore of being competitive. Or having an international sales force traveling around is not a critical success factor anymore. The critical success factor is now to leverage next generation enterprise abilities, and that means abilities in three dimensions: people, place, and technology, and especially technology. And the critical success factor is that actually the local government and governments support companies by means of programs which provide know-how and funding to become next generation enterprise.
Michael, this is quite profound and really reflects an inflection point in terms of how enterprises and governments can move forward to better enable the people that are working within their organizations and across boundaries as well. So how does an organization become a next generation enterprise?
This is pretty much forward. Over the years, we developed together with a number of business consultants a toolbox. There is available a New World of Work Next Generation Enterprise toolbox. And maybe I just describe roughly the approach from a company perspective. So the first step for sure is the so-called envisioning phase, which is about defining in the executives round what next generation enterprise and new world of work shall mean to the company strategically within a 5 or 7 years framework. That takes usually 1 or 2 days to set up a first framework, to define a vision and a roadmap. This together is then the first rough framework, and this defines then the main action points for the transformation. You then do in the next stages a more drill down, what are assets already existing in the company which can be reused on the way to becoming a next generation enterprise. For example, technologies, IT technologies, what is available, where are the gaps, processes, for example, leadership processes and tools like performance management processes and tools, like performance contract, performance review, is a balanced scorecard in place. So there's a huge checklist which helps to check the readiness, the next generation enterprise readiness of an organization. And when all this drill down analysis is done, then there is in place a clear roadmap and project plan. And the first steps within the concept development, which then follows this as-is analysis, is the definition of so-called personas. Personas easy to describe, are job roles. So organizations look at important job roles. How are these job roles, for example, a seller, a marketeer, a product manager, how do they perform their job today, and how will they or should they perform their jobs in future? And then scenarios are built around these job roles or personas. And from these scenarios, which describe future work styles, it can be deducted and understood what kind of technologies are necessary in future, what kind of processes, tools, organizational changes necessary. So from here, you start to redesign the organization step by step. And it all happens, again, in the three dimensions, people, place, and technology. Very important is, in parallel and from the beginning, to measure the success of this initiative and transformation. So why and what does it mean, measuring the success? Such a transformation does mean a huge investment. It's certainly a multi-million investment, and such a transformation is nothing that takes place overnight. Experience shows it's actually a development and transformation process which takes like 2, 3, 4, 5 years, step by step, in order to make a sustainable change. So facing a significant investment involved in this transformation, it's a must and it's necessary to define upfront what are the objectives of this transformation and to lay it down in a clear benefits case. So to make the return on investment measurable. Why is it so important? In the past, up to the 90s, that kind of reorganizations ended up somewhere in the soft change management corner. So typical executive comments, why should we spend millions? We cannot measure it anyhow. Now the difference is, meanwhile, we have got know-how to gain transparency, quantitative transparency, to make this measurable, that kind of transformation in clear facts and figures. So it's important to start with a benefits case, to measure the baseline before the organization is going on with the transformation, so that you have got reference numbers, and then to measure step by step the changes and the success of the transformation. And this is extremely beneficial if you look at it from different angles. For example, first, it's important to measure it in order to prove that your original planning and investment makes sense, that you are on track. That's certainly the executive view. Secondly, you gain from this kind of success measurement important input for change management communication, so that you don't have to communicate just in soft facts, but in hard facts. And third, some companies gain extra benefit in two dimensions by using the data gained from this for external communication. Think of employer branding. Meanwhile, we have companies out there where applicants from the free employment market don't go anymore. They don't apply. The high potentials move elsewhere, but not to these companies. Why? They don't have in place a next generation enterprise strategy. So running such a project is a question of enhancing and developing the employer branding. And secondly, in some situations, it's even useful and supportive to the company's product marketing. Think of the Microsoft case. For sure, the Microsoft New World of Work story and learnings support the product story and marketing as well. So in some cases, you have got even this additional benefit. And there is a lot to gain. I'm happy to share some insights, what actually changes, and I'm happy to provide some examples in facts and figures.
So that's a natural segue, I guess, into this next question about facts and figures, because really, you know, we need to quantify that return on investment. So how does that investment into a next generation enterprise transformation pay back in return on investment?
It's a very clear case. Very simple, and that's pretty obvious, is when you use new work forms and leverage new work forms, like remote working, virtual lifestyles, and work styles, it's pretty obvious that within this opportunity is a chance to reduce facility cost. And in many companies, facility costs are, after personnel costs, the second or third highest cost item in the profit and loss statement. So we are talking about a lot of money. And by means of new work forms and applying new or next generation enterprise work models, you can easily save 20 to 30% of your facility costs. This is office space, energy, cleaning, you name it. So this is pretty much straightforward, but there is more to come. It's not only about cost. When you start to allow people and management to embrace new work forms, it leads to an effect that, for example, employee satisfaction is increasing. Imagine if a company culture develops and moves away from a presence and control culture towards a trust culture, which accepts virtual and remote work styles, this changes a lot. When you are not forced to commute every morning, maybe to spend 1 hour in your car every morning or on the train together with other millions of people, when you are allowed to work from home, from your favorite places, to work time-wise more flexible, this has a huge impact. So it's not only about cost reduction, and you can measure it clearly. Suddenly, people, and that's amazing, work longer, more, and it's measurable. On average, work time increases by 10 to 15% within the course and after a transformation to new world of work model. So an increase of work time. This has to do with motivation and satisfaction. Secondly, other indicator, sick leave is decreasing. So if sick leave is on average 10, 12 days per person per year, or something about, or over, let's say over 6 days per person and year, suddenly it falls below 6 to 7 days per person and year. And this is a huge financial gain. And there is more to come. Salary, suddenly, and this has to do with employer branding, new hires are available to start with lower salary expectations. So start salaries can decrease for future new hires. And even within the group of the existing staff, the expectations for salary increase go down. The increase of salaries over years is going down by 10 to 15%. This means a clear and huge cost reduction potential. And now think of times of crisis. Now it's winter time, influenza. Or in Europe, we were facing a couple of weeks where we were suffering from smoke, volcano smoke, and actually air traffic was blocked over weeks in Europe. I think that was 2 years ago. Now, think about using new smart work models based on remote and virtual management. Suddenly, your company becomes more robust in times of crisis, as you are not dependent on physical presence, on physical cooperation. So this is another factor. And from next year on, I will have sufficient data to even start talking and sharing data about revenue increase and increase of profitability. We can already foresee from the data which we collected over the last few years a clear positive impact there. Just give me a couple of months to come up with additional data from this area and around these topics as well.
What? I can clearly see that there's then a definite advantage for corporations to engage into this next generation model of which you are in a world authority, and based on all of this research that you've done as well. Now, earlier you talked about the impact of this kind of transformation system on national economies, and you talked about Austria as an example. Do you have any additional information you can share?
At the moment, we focus this strategy, government strategy, on new areas which we are going to explore. Just think of special groups in our societies who do not have the optimal access to career opportunities and employment. Let's think about and talk about females, for example. Still, we are suffering within the European Union, and this is not a specific Austrian phenomenon, that there are still differences existing between males and females and related career opportunities, and especially females with family, children, and at the same time males with family and children. So remote, virtual and new work styles allow this group to develop careers in a much better way than we knew it in the past. Or, I shortly mentioned it before, people working or living in remote areas of a country, suddenly they don't have to move to, for example, country capital or industrial areas. They can continue to live where they love to live, but suddenly get full access to career opportunities as if they would live in the country's capital. Or physically disabled people, it's difficult for enterprises and the affected people to work in an office. So why not, by leveraging smart new work styles, allow them and this group of people to work in the safe and customized environment where they feel safe and where they find the functionalities that allows them to live and work ideally, and to participate in life and work life. So remote working for physically disabled people is, for example, and will become a critical success factor to career. So we bring many of these groups suddenly into the focal point of employment and career in society, and create throughout our societies and countries new opportunities, new momentum, and we start to deploy resources that were never used to that extent before. And especially in Europe, we are meanwhile suffering from demographic effects. The average age is increasing. We have to think about how to leverage and integrate and use the experienced experts and people in our society, how, for example, to integrate pensioners, and how to motivate them to participate actively. And these are all opportunities which we have to think about. And given the demographic change, it is now a must to leverage these formerly unused potentials and resources. And when we talked about Eastern Europe countries, here it's especially, and that we can see the geography, which can be a huge source of additional economic resources, when there will be smart solutions in place to use resources all over the country, wherever they are, but to find the best potentials wherever they live, and so to create access to especially human resources, but as well to manufacturing and production resources, more independently from geography than ever before.
You know, from a sort of a logical standpoint, I can see the benefits to national economies. Do you have any early indications about how it could increase GDP, or some tools to be able to measure that at some point in the future? In addition, what would be the impact on continents like Africa?
Okay, both very interesting questions. And there is a clear indication. There is a very good case study, and this is Turkey. If you look at Turkey and the growth rates, GDP growth rates of Turkey. And if you combine it with the insight that fascinatingly, especially Turkish companies started early to think about new work styles, to leverage new technologies, here we have a case of how next generation enterprise work styles and value creation can accelerate growth, GDP growth, and stabilize it, as this growth in Turkey is not a one-year event. We can observe it already throughout a number of years. So we can assume some sustainability here. Can you please repeat your second question?
The next second question was about countries, or I should say continents, that parts of it don't have a lot of infrastructure, and that's a serious concern, and economies are still, some of them are in a very early stage, for example, in the African continent. What would be the impact there, or is it able to be instituted in that kind of region?
This is a great question, as it is of major importance. Africa, let's look at IBM. As Africa plays an important role for the IBM strategy. And this is just an example for many other companies. IBM is running a global strategic program called Fluid, which is considering the option to bring IBM employees into a cloud of talent, the so-called talent cloud. So instead of being full-time employed with IBM, you become a freelance, you could become a freelance talent outside IBM, which is assigned and hired through a software platform, which you can assume to be a mixture of eBay, Amazon, where you find your, as an IBM talent outside the company, where you find your assignments, your jobs. So the employment model is possibly fundamentally changing. Why do I mention this? Suddenly, an IBM today employee of this organization in Germany, when this person moves to the talent cloud, is suddenly and will be suddenly competing with, for example, software specialists in Africa. And here I'm coming back to the original point. IBM actually does consider the high potential in numbers and qualification of software programmers in Africa as a future potential for IBM. And now we come back to Thomas Friedman, who said, and here it is, the world is flat. Here we have another example that the world is becoming really flat now. Now, German IBM employee in the talent cloud competes with African software expert, and they both have now similar chances to get assigned to a project or for a new job, for a temporary job, as employment becomes more and more temporary. Now, coming back to Eastern Europe countries, we can expect that the resource of the African continent in this new economy will, within the next few years, get easier access to global markets, including employment markets, corporate markets, business markets. Now, the question is, especially for Eastern Europe countries, isn't it the right timing now to quantum leap in order to secure a competitor advantage before the African continent will move on and embrace and occupy global markets? I believe there is a time window left, but in order to secure this competitive advantage, it's a must and an opportunity window now to get started, especially in Eastern Europe countries.
Do you see a take-up then also in countries such as China and India into this new world of work?
Yeah. China, for example, what we can clearly observe is the acceleration of industrial development. As we can foresee that it's now only a matter of few years that there will be no know-how differences between China and Europe, for example. This is another critical factor in the global market game, which makes New World of Work and next generation strategies a must. And we can see infrastructure is already excellent within the industrial parts of China. Human resources are highly educated, and education is still at high rates improving. So it's just a matter of time. And it's about, and coming back to my original wording, it's about getting plugged in. So how to get plugged into global economies now, as later, it will be extremely difficult. Better start now to change your corporate organization. Better start now to change national economies now, as it takes anyhow 3, 4, 5 years. Starting it in 3, 4, 5 years might be too late.
Michael, you're a world acknowledged authority and you do a lot of research. In fact, your institute is leading the globe in much of this research. So can you share some of the results from this work?
At the moment, from research from national programs, this is not possible due to NDAs. What I can say is it's always about the development of industrial New World of Work programs, next generation programs, which are a framework or offer a framework to industries and individual companies in terms of knowledge transfer. So how to create access for companies and industries to best practices around New World of Work and next generation enterprises, which also provides within the framework access to experts. So not only know-how, but experts like business consultant, for example, to help through the transformation processes. And it all cannot be done simply financed out of the company's cash. It is necessary, if a national economy has got ambitions, to fund that kind of transformation and help companies and industries through this process, especially when the starting point today is somehow lagging. It always depends on the already existing assets. So overall, there are similarities between national programs, but it is necessary to actually customize it depending on assets you can build on, conditions, site conditions, and also related to industry that you want to support and bring forward within a distinctive national economy.
Michael, we're going to take a bit of a shift in the questions now. We've talked a lot about your work in terms of transforming governments and also enterprises with this next generation enterprise transformation and the new world of work. I want to now delve into things like your prior roles, for example. You've done a lot. You've been a leader for some time. You've impacted the world in many ways. Can you talk about some of your prior roles and then share some lessons or best practices or recommendations from these prior roles?
Sure. I'm happy to share what I experienced so far. My big plan and vision was always to gather experience, industry experience first, and then to return to university in order to share my learnings, to share it with students and companies, and to share it by means of research and study programs where I'm involved. So what I did is about 17 years of management career. I started with Philips Consumer Electronics. Actually, that was about video recording, VHS, invention of DVD, introduction of DVD to the markets, And in the 90s, I actually experienced and did the first steps into outsourcing of production in consumer electronics to Asia. So, excuse me, that was an extremely useful experience. And actually, from that was to learn there are no limits in terms of outsourcing and making production agile and flexible. After that, I actually came across Capgemini Consulting. It's a Europe-based consulting company with, meanwhile, 100,000 people on board, where I especially was responsible for the telecom and media sector in CE. So I actually worked with leading telecom and media companies in Russia, Romania, Bulgaria, all across Eastern Europe, Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovak Republic. There are many more to mention. And sorry when I forgot other important, very important countries in my list. This I did over 10 years and did at the same time within these industries business transformation, business strategies, new work forms, reorganization. It's all about productivity, efficiency, and effectiveness. And after that, I became a Microsoft manager for over 3 years and helped Microsoft to embrace the next generation enterprise model in Austria, supported as well in Switzerland and in Germany. So in, as one of the results, you can see we talked about Microsoft Austria, what this was leading to in these local organizations of Microsoft. And then I finally followed my original call and plan, which is university and sharing, as I did many things in an excellent way and many, many things wrong and had to compensate for that in night shifts and weekend work. So there was a lot to learn, and I observed many things that people and excellent managers do really well and all the pitfall and mistakes. And that's what I'm sharing now with my students and companies that I'm cooperating with in our research project. And research is all around new world of work, next generation enterprise, where we help enterprises, governments, through these processes, help them to develop programs and to go through these programs. And especially we help them to make the success of these programs measurable and quantify what they can achieve and what they do achieve on the way.
We're now going to look at computing from a broader perspective. What do you see as the computing areas or domains that have the highest growth rates and why?
This is an awesome question. That's really great. As we also in computing, we can see a paradigm shift ongoing as some software providers don't believe in it yet, but we can see businesses embracing it. It's about cloud computing. What makes cloud computing so key and critical to businesses? It's especially and first about small and medium-sized enterprises. Professional software was so far up to the 90s only accessible to large enterprises who were actually able to run IT departments with personnel, with server infrastructure. So to have, for example, an IBM Lotus Notes or to have a Microsoft SharePoint was a matter of size and financial capability. Nowadays, we can buy, for example, Microsoft SharePoint like from the power plug. You pay per user license and you use it from a virtual server, which is run in central Microsoft IT centers. So what you can do now as a small and medium-sized company is simply do not care if you have enough cash available to run an IT department, as you don't need the classical IT department anymore. And you can simply have now access to the most excellent, more professional, most secure software products that are available worldwide. And this means a paradigm shift and makes the world even flatter. For software industry, this is a paradigm shift as well, as it is changing business models in the software industry fundamentally. And you can observe two kinds of software companies at the moment, the ones currently trying still to ignore it, and the others proactively bringing this new business model into the focal point of their next generation business model.
Michael, you have the unique perspective in that you, for example, led a major summit for government leaders. You work with top leaders from industry. You're a recognized authority. You're a professor at a research university in this area. So from all of those perspectives, what do you see as policies that need to be implemented to foster innovation?
To accelerate innovation is, from a national perspective, a matter, and here we come back to the original point of next generation enterprise development program. What I mean is, if you as a government are successful to plug in your local national economies into global markets, you automatically accelerate innovation. Why? And that's a direct relationship here that we can see. Participation in global markets, overcoming geographical barriers, for example, challenges companies standing suddenly within global markets, challenges companies to provide new services at new competitive pricing, and challenges companies to create new innovative products which were never demanded before. Why? As before, as former barriers like geography was blocking these companies and industries, they do not matter anymore. And it's as simple as that. When your staff and management is used, for example, to interact and cooperate and collaborate with customers, for example, it's a very simple example, via video conferencing, if they have the right culture, the right abilities, they will start using that. They will start leveraging it, and suddenly it's not a matter if I have to fly. Do I have to fly 9 or 8 or 11 hours to my customer? This doesn't play a role anymore, as I can deal with my customers very simple, fast, and at low cost. It's only just a matter of my creativity and my know-how, what I'm going to offer, but the process of offering and marketing and selling suddenly is barrier-free. And this certainly supports and facilitates innovation. It actually quantum leaps it.
There's a proliferation of information out there, and some consider it spam because it's just so much. So it'll be interesting to see from your point of view, because you have access to so much data out there, what do you consider to be the top resources that you use and that you would recommend to the audience for them to use?
This is a question which actually is a question of the industry and the business you are in. But in general, I can say learning about the topic itself, next generation enterprise, new world of work, there is meanwhile very limited some know-how available. There are like 2, 3, 4 reasonable books available which add some value around this topic. More useful, there is a handful of consultants available having real practical experience with new world of work and next generation enterprise transformation. Let's say, to sum it up, at the moment, many companies are doing it, but the know-how sharing and knowledge sharing is at the moment still very much limited. And that's the main goal of my research and our institute, is to create within the next few years a platform which allows interested parties and experts to connect and to find the right experts and the right know-how. At the moment, it's very much in terms of knowledge transfer, pioneering everything. I think it's only a matter of 3-4 years. Luckily, we already established a strong network. So whoever is interested is more than welcome to contact us, to contact me, to contact my colleagues in the research team that we established here. And we're happy to help and bring the right experts together. And we also help you personally and visit you and work with you in projects. That's the second option and another option that we can offer.
Do you have a recommended website that they can go to?
Yeah, sure. For the ones being able to read German language, there is a New World of Work blog. It's called www.newworldofwork.wordpress.com. There are a couple of thousands of visitors per month. At the moment, it's unfortunately limited to German language. We are considering to finance and to start a parallel English language blog soon. That's on my to-do list for 2013. But first, I need to secure the financing of it.
From the audience perspective, what they can do is use one of the up-to-date browsers that are out there, that are the internet browsers. Almost all of them now have translate capability in real time. So, I mean, I use that quite a bit. So that's what I would recommend at this point. And then they'll be to access for those who are not German-speaking. Now, for the next question, you know, it's a complex world today, in some respects, simplifying in others. But you must see controversy out there in all of the different sort of domains that you're in and all the research and work that you do. Can you talk about some of them?
Yeah, sure. And I'm happy to do that. It's always a long line, concrete industry cases. So what we do is, first, it's about national development programs around New World of Work and Next Generation Enterprise. Then it's about helping and supporting individual companies. For example, we have many cases where companies are setting up new headquarters within the next few years. And within this context, they also want to change their work forms and bring into innovation into their value creation models. It's sometimes even about, we had just recently a case where a company was considering the alternative, shall we even invest in setting up new headquarters, or shall we better take the millions and invest them into inventing our work models in a new way and introducing new smart work forms, and can we then avoid investing into new buildings? So there are always differences. What is always the same and binding it all together is then the success measurement, as within and after the development of a vision strategy, and then during implementation, all companies so far decided to get our help to measure then the success of these programs over a period of 3, 4, or 5 years.
Computing right now is an interesting field, and we have fields like accounting, medicine, and law, which have demonstrated professional development, adherence to the code of ethics, personal responsibility, public accountability, quality assurance, and so on. Do you see computing, or do you feel that computing should be a recognized profession?
Absolutely. It's a key resource. Computing is a key resource in future, as due to the development of cloud computing and easier access to computer and computing resources in future, more and more businesses gain more value creation through computing than through actually creating value in the shop floor. So business models are moving towards coordination of value creation, leveraging know-how and knowledge, and actual gaining or production of value from manufacturing and shop floor activities is, and you can read it from statistics, is decreasing. And in this, computing is the future key resource to all these businesses and national economies.
Well, Michael, it's been a real pleasure having you come in today. You are a recognized authority, well respected around the world by governments and by industry. You have an amazing success history over a very great career covering many decades. So, considering your demanding schedule, thank you for coming in today to share your deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your great questions. It was really a pleasure.
I'm Stephen Abaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Professor Michael Bartz, global top authority in next generation enterprise business transformation.